Edwin Clyburn.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. How are you?
Multitasking here this morning?
I'm sorry?
Multitasking here this morning?
Yes, I am.
All right. I guess you're pretty busy up there, huh?
Well, I'm still in Columbia.
Oh, okay.
Headed back in a few minutes.
Heading back in a few minutes. Well, you know, there's a lot going on out there, and I am very, very happy to have this opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you.
But one of the questions that I have, you know, down there in the legislature, they've been talking about setting aside or being able to borrow the money in case the government doesn't come through with that, what is it, $120 million for the port. What do you think? What do you think that sends a message to our federal government, and do you think they have to worry about that?
Well, I think they have to worry about it. The fact of the matter is, according to most people that I talk to, South Carolinians were against doing federal earmarks. All the ports in this country have been deepened when needed to be by congressional earmarks. I've done that twice before,
mm-hmm.
Regarding Charleston. And I saw this morning headlines coming out of Georgia. Senator Saxby Chambliss is now saying it is going to be very difficult for Savannah since earmarks are no longer allowed. I think it's kind of short-sighted on South Carolinians' part. To think that a finite amount of monies for any kind of infrastructure development are not going to be hard to go after. You cannot believe for one moment that the federal budget will put the Charleston port in there over the Los Angeles port or the San Francisco port. Or the Norfolk port. What you have to do is make the case and have your congressperson make the case and the trade-offs that are necessary up in Washington to get your port on the list. Now, I have seen the timeline, and according to what I have seen, if the regular order were to run its course, the Charleston port will come up on the list somewhere around 2040. That is just unacceptable to me.
Correct.
So that's a problem we have. You've got Senator Graham on the Appropriations Committee over in the Senate, and you got yours truly as the major Democratic liaison with the Appropriations Committee in the House. And we've now been handcuffed, and we just have to wait our turn. And our turn is far, far down the line. The last thing I want to say about this is this. We have not cut out earmarks. We've only cut out congressional earmarks. The administration is still free to earmark, and they do earmark. Now, let's just think about that. If you've got an administration that's free to earmark, where will it do its earmarks? Will it do the earmarks in states that are friendly to the administration or states that are competitive? Or will it do the earmarks in a state that boasts about being anti the administration? I think it's a little bit ridiculous. To think that we can hurl all kinds of insults at the president, his wife, his family members, and then think he's going to put us down for $150 million earmark. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, Congressman Clyburn, I did think that the that South Carolina what was coming up with 180, and this was the 120. So you're telling me that technically we shouldn't even be getting that 120?
Well, I don't know. All I'm saying, I'm just giving you what the scenario is. Maybe the president and the administration will say that this is something we ought to do. But all I'm asking you is, why should they pick Charleston over Norfolk, or even Savannah, for that matter?
Well, I think the bottom line is, though, do they have the money, period? Is the money available there? You know, we hear day in and day out that our government is out of money, and, of course, then that goes into raising taxes and this whole scenario. But, you know, the question is, does the government have the money to be able to be putting this out? Or, you know, should all this kind of stuff have to be stopped and the states have to do it on their own?
The government has always got money. The question is what the priorities are. And I think that when it comes to South Carolina and the Charleston port, it's a priority for us. But I suspect that the Norfolk port is a priority for the people in Virginia.
Sure.
Now, what are the national priorities? Charleston, I think, can make the case for national security reasons and other things. But I don't know that we can do it in the kind of atmosphere that's currently been created.
So you're saying that it's actually the people of South Carolina that are causing them not to be able to get this earmark, or if you're going to call it an earmark?
Well, all I'm saying is we have taken away the ability of Congress people to do earmarks. I have said time and time again, throwing out the baby with the bathwater doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I grew up in a parsonage. My father was president of his church's presbytery. I often tell of having listened to discussions when a pastor went astray. They defrocked the pastor. They didn't board up the church or get rid of the congregation. They got rid of the pastor. Now, when you have a member of Congress that is violating the system, you get rid of the member of the Congress. We didn't get rid of the lieutenant governor's office when Ard was pled guilty.
Defrocked.
We got rid of Ard.
Right.
And Glenn McConnell became the lieutenant governor.
Correct.
I mean, that's the way it ought to be. What we did with earmarking is it's tantamount to saying, let's eliminate the lieutenant governor's office because you got a guy in there who is admitted to having violated the law. We got rid of the guy and got someone in there who I think is an outstanding South Carolinian, and I can say that about Glenn McConnell. I hope it doesn't get him in trouble with his political supporters on the Republican side. I do think he's an outstanding South Carolinian.
He is an outstanding South Carolinian. But, you know, as we move forward here, what about all the regulations and the talk of more regulations, particularly as it goes towards the EPA and, you know, we're shutting down coal mining, we're doing all these things. It's becoming increasingly difficult. The price of gas, of course, we all know is up, even though it's down a couple pennies now. But what can Congress and the Senate do to alleviate some of this onerous stuff that's happening that's causing business to wonder, can I stay in business?
Well, I just think all of that is foolhardy. We know that's not true. You know, people, as long as I used to be on the bank board for 14 years before going to Congress, I was on the board of the predecessor banks to Bank of America, CNS and CNS Sovereign. Every time I went to a board meeting, there was all kind of moaning and groaning about federal regulations, about the federal deficit. I'll never forget one board member, every time we went to a meeting, he stood up and talked about the deficit is going to soon be $100 billion, and when that happens, our economy will collapse. Well, what is the deficit today? And our economy has not collapsed. And,
a lot,
you know,
of people say we're on the verge of collapse here.
I don't think so at all.
You don't?
I think that all of these incendiary talking heads that we have on television, all of these headline writers, I don't think that this economy is on the verge of collapse. I think that President Obama did what was necessary to bring us back from the brink, and that's why we're experiencing now 26 consecutive months of private sector growth. That is why we see now unemployment in South Carolina and other places around the country falling. That's why the automobile industry is back. General Motors is now number one in the world. When Obama took office, General Motors was in bankruptcy. I think that we have challenges, and that's why we elect people like Barack Obama to meet those challenges, and I think he's doing a great job in doing so.
So I guess we could say that you're going to vote for him?
Oh, I think I might bring myself to cast a vote for him.
Now, coming up in November after the election, those triggers that y'all worked on, in fact, you were on the committee of six, wasn't it?
I was on
12?
The so-called super committee,
yes.
And on the Biden committee. Yes, the Biden committee was six of us plus the president, or
right.
The vice president.
But so what do you think is going to happen, because do you think that y'all are going to get together on a budget up there?
Yes, I do.
The election?
You may recall I've said time and time again two things. Number one, we are not going to be able to move an agenda forward until we have a definitive election. I think that McConnell told the whole world that his number one priority, and he said this within days of the president taking the oath of office, that his number one priority was to make sure that Barack Obama was a one-term president. Now, he said that before the president was in office 90 days, and he spent all of his time not trying to help the president find answers to our problems, but he spent all of his time throwing up roadblocks, doing whatever he could to make sure that the president failed. So that's the first problem. The second problem is the fact that after that definitive election, we are going to have what I call the mother of all lame ducks. And it all depends upon what happens on November the 6th as to what will happen to the lame duck session that will come about somewhere around the 13th or 14th of November. And we'll be in that all the way up to Christmas. I expect to meet Santa Claus coming down the chimney of the United States Capitol.
So you think you'll all be camped out there for Christmas?
Yes, we may come home on Christmas Eve, but I suspect that we'll be there because all of these things that you're talking about now come to a head on December 31st.
Sure. Well, that's what my concern is. So you don't think that there'll be any budget decisions before the election, but after the election, there will be a resolution, shall we say, before these triggers take place?
Yes, I do. I really think that. I've been saying that for months now. The committee, so-called super committee, had time constraints, but there are no time constraints on the Congress as a whole. So Congress can do what it will or may. Between now and December 31st, and I do not see the majority of the House and Senate allowing sequestration to take place.
Absolutely. You got time for one more question?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about the health care mandate, and, of course, that is in front of the Supreme Court right now. What do you think what effect is that going to have if it goes forth or if it is struck down, either scenario?
Well, I don't think it does me any good to try to get out in front of the Supreme Court. I will soon be 72 years old. I have lived on the Supreme Court mandate called Separate but Equal. I was 13 years old when the Supreme Court reversed that decision and said that Brown versus the Board of Education should be the law of the land. All I've said is whatever the Supreme Court decision is, people will make whatever adjustments that need to be made and move forward. So I'm not going to get out in front and say what may or may not be the case. Let's just wait and see what the Supreme Court says. And then the Congress itself may be able to make modifications if they're called for. But we'll just wait and see.
Just wait and see. And, well, then, one more question. What about this amendment to the First Amendment?
Well, I'm not for tinkering at all with the Constitution. If this whole foolishness about amending the First Amendment, and there were cries back in 2010 about amending the 14th Amendment, I just think that we ought to just step back and take a deep breath and stop some of this foolishness. Every time some talking head disagrees with something, he or she goes out and starts the bloggers, the blabbering about this and that or the other. I would hope that we stop some of this foolishness.
So you wouldn't want to see this go forward?
Well, I'm not paying attention to that kind of stuff. When people start talking about we need to amend the Constitution, do this, that, or the other, I'm not paying attention to that. I really don't.
You don't?
No.
All right. Well, listen, you know what? I certainly hope that we get jobs, jobs, jobs. I tell you what, I was very impressed the other day. I think it was on Friday in the Wall Street Journal to see South Carolina bringing manufacturing jobs back, and the Wall Street Journal felt notably about it and wrote a big article about it. Did you happen to see that one?
Well, I saw a lot of reports on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw the Wall Street Journal's report, but I think I said on your show here some time ago that Boeing was in South Carolina to stay, that I thought they made a business decision in coming here,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that we were just posturing to be talking about what the NLRB may do or may not do. Now I don't hear anything about it.
Right. Well, you know, I just think it's great. You know, Michelin, of course, is expanding here, BMW, and it was a big article about all the manufacturing that is coming.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
And we'll soon have more tires being produced in South Carolina than they will have in Youngstown and Akron, Ohio.
Yeah, I thought it was a really nice statement that they said that the guy that is actually the heads Michelin's North American operations, we can't tolerate the level of instability that he's talking about China. As for China, labor costs are rising quickly, and they're still concerned about protecting intellectual property, which is why they made the decision to come to South Carolina. I thought that was a real statement.
Yes, and South Carolina, I think, is poised to really, really do great things, especially along the I-95 corridor. We ought to be able to see the necessity in utilizing the manpower that exists along that corridor, its proximity to the port. And I can see the same thing happening there that happened years ago along Interstate 85.
Absolutely, which is why we need that port, Congressman Clyburn.
Well, I don't think there's anybody been more pro-port than Jim Clyburn.
That's right. Say, listen, I sure appreciate you calling in. I know you're a very busy man,
yes.
But thank you for calling in this morning.
Thank you.
All right, Congressman
Bye-bye.
Clyburn, have a safe trip.